From the American Academy of Dermatology, welcome to Dialogues in Dermatology. I'm Dr. Ben Stoff, Editor-in-Chief. Thanks for tuning in.
When you join Mayo Clinic's Dermatology Department, you're joining a team that's transforming dermatologic care for the better. Here, you're doing the work that not only makes our patients' lives better, you're doing the work that changes your life. Visit jobs.mayoclinic.org/dermatology to learn more.
Hello, everyone. I am Yemi Sikumbi. Welcome to Dialogues in Dermatology. I am Professor of Dermatology and Laboratory Medicine and Pathology at the Mayo Clinic in Florida, where I practice both dermatology and dermatopathology. I am excited today to be having a conversation with Dr. Paul Niem. He's a professor of the newly minted Department of Dermatology at the University of Washington in Seattle. We will be talking about his work in the paper titled Merkel cell carcinoma, recurrence risk estimation is improved by integrating factors beyond cancer stage, a multivariable model and web-based calculator. Thank you so much for joining me today in conversation, Paul.
Thanks, Yemi. I'm delighted to be able to talk to you about this study that we're very, very happy about.
Well, I will tell you that from my perspective, and I'm sure for most of our colleagues who are listening to us, we know Merkel cell carcinoma to be a rare and aggressive skin cancer. But of course, in 2023, I feel like the rest of the world caught up when beloved singer, songwriter Jimmy Buffett's death of Merkel cell carcinoma sort of sparked a new interest. But for those of us who see patients with Merkel cell carcinoma, we've always been aware of the need to predict how these patients will behave. Do you mind just sharing with our audience the gap your particular study was trying to address regarding Merkel cell?
Yeah, I'd be pleased to. And it is a fun, exciting study for us because we've literally been working on it for 18 years. And we've known for that long that this work needed to be done, but it took a long time to get it right. And one of the reasons is death is not the only or important readout here. We needed recurrence data, and that's never captured by the national databases. And so we basically had to make our own data because it wasn't available elsewhere. And that took maybe a very long time. Okay. And to get to robust numbers where we could trust them. The nice thing about this is it builds on AGCC stage, but adds a bunch of other factors that are really obvious, like, is it a man or is it a woman? Are they immune suppressed or are they not? And those things are not in stage and they turn out to make a huge difference.
That's wonderful to hear. As you mentioned, 18 years of work, that's the kind of dedication, honestly, that we need. I feel like we have certain areas in dermatology that we need to, even though it might appear slow, move the work forward. Now, I mentioned I'm a dermatopathologist, and I know that when we think about AJCC staging, for me, you all as clinicians are asking the questions, is it in situ or is it not? That's important. Clinically, we're at the bedside, like trying to measure the size. Is it less than 2, between 2 to 5? Is it greater than 5? How deep's the involvement? And then, of course, the metastatic status for the N and the M component of that staging system. But when you mention that, that seems important, but then there are other components. So do you mind sharing with the audience, what do you think limits using just AJCC criteria in assessing Merkel cell recurrence risk?
Yes, great question. And it's things that we've known clinically for years. We've known that women, for whatever reason, are significantly protected from both getting the cancer and dying from it and having it recur. And I don't know for sure, but I believe that's because women have an immune system that turns on a little bit more easily than men. And they often obviously suffer from more autoimmune disease, but I think they're protected from certain infections and perhaps certain cancers. The fact is there's a 50% lower risk that a woman's going to have a recurrence from their Merkel than a man. And that's not in stage. The immune suppression thing is the exact opposite. If you have chronic T-cell immune suppression, like you have a lymphoma, leukemia, or chronic lymphocytic leukemia in particular, on average, there's at least a 2-fold increase in having a recurrence. That's not in stage. Age plays a small effect. At each decade older, you're about 10% more likely to have a recurrence. And when you put those things together, you get a really profound difference compared to stage alone.
Very helpful. Now, you set the stage looking at gender as one of those non-stage factors, looking at immunosuppression status as a non-stage factor, age as a non-stage factor, and then also looking through the paper, even the primary tumor site and maybe on a known primary status of the tumor. Do you weigh all of these differently? Does one sort of trump the other for you? Help me understand this, particularly as we look back at the work you all have published on about the univariable analysis on this data.
Yeah, we toyed with putting this all into one paper, the univariable data and the multivariable, and it was just way too long and too complicated. So we published the univariable findings, and those were pretty similar to what everybody's agreeing. There's no disagreement that you're in better shape being a woman. You're in better shape having a normal immune system. And so the beauty was, the novelty here was putting them all together in a way that one brain or one written staging system cannot do. And it's so easy to do that now with a statistical calculator. You could call it a nomogram. That was the old way to do it prior to 10 or so years ago. And now we just have a website. If you can't remember the name of it, you just enter Merkel recurrence risk calculator in Google, and you'll get this web calculator. And you just put in the very simple things like the person's stage, man, woman, and immune status. Are they immune suppressed or not? And then the most useful thing is it tells you what your remaining risk is. And that's really dynamic in Merkel cell carcinoma, because 95% of recurrences happen within 3 years, if they're ever going to happen. Mm-hmm. So you get this really accurate sense of, you know, are you 10% likely to have it come back or 85? And that's literally the range. And then by 1 or 2 years, every visit we have with the patient, we can say, hey, now you're down to 10% left. You started at 50. And the patients get it and they love it. And it helps us change how often we see them and how we scan them. And of course, now there are two wonderful blood tests that really allow us to avoid scans and detect this cancer coming back earlier.
So that's wonderful. I think that as I'm listening to you speak, I cannot overemphasize what I'm learning about this being a dynamic risk calculator. I think for most nomograms, if you will, using old terminology or risk calculators, you're getting the information at a timestamp, and in a sense that risk follows you for the duration or course of whatever malignancy it is that we're talking about. But this is key because perhaps, in fact, not even perhaps, maybe almost certainly, the information you receive at follow-up visit one will definitely be different than at follow-up visit 10, because now you're however many years out, possibility for things looking much better for you, knowing that most of those recurrences occur within 3 years. Also, as you mentioned, the value of even healthcare cost savings. Can we talk about that? Because as we screen, I'm at fault too, based on the fear or the anticipation of recurrence, right, for patients. But now with a calculator such as this, I imagine the impact in even decreasing costs on imaging, et cetera.
Yeah, it's really an exciting time in medicine in general, but in this cancer, the progress has been striking. We have both an antibody-based test and now circulating tumor DNA that's been public at meetings, and it's about to come out in a major publication across 6 centers. Both of those tests work fantastically. So we now have tests that are much, much better than scan, just require a little bit of blood, and they're sensitive and they're specific. So, you know, of course, if they go up, then you need your scan to figure out where it actually is. But yeah, we can get those blood tests done remotely, and we see the patient once every 6 or 9 or 12 months, but they're getting their blood tests every 3 months. And then by 3 or 4 years, it's time to graduate them.
Yeah.
And that's a happy day. You know, your risk is less than 2% that this will ever come back. You know, you come back and see us if there's a problem, but we don't need to schedule anything active anymore. And we then are able to catch the cancer and focus our recurrence efforts much more on the people who are high risk.
Yeah. Is that something that you think, you know, when you look at the study and you look at the timeline, you know, I know it was from 2003 to 2019. Of course, that timeline predates some of the exciting abilities we have in terms of the serologies, in terms of the circulating DNA, like you mentioned, and then in terms of the Merkel cell polyomavirus serology testing. Do you think that there is a possibility of future incorporating that data into the risk calculation? Is there value to doing that? What do you expect from this?
Yes, you're totally viewing into the future, I believe. We toyed with putting antibody data in the calculator. It'll be easy for us to add. Many people didn't have antibody tests done a few years ago. Now I think it's becoming much more dominant. If you make antibodies at the time the diagnosis was made, or within usually 3 to 6 months, you can check them and it's quite reliable. You haven't lost them, but for a number of months. It decreases the risk of the cancer coming back by 40%. It's almost as good as being a woman. And it's an independent risk factor, very strong independent. So yeah, that's something that we can do and we probably will explore. We don't have enough data yet quite about the circulating tumor DNA. That is pretty straightforward. If it's positive, you've got some cancer left. If it's negative, you don't. The antibodies are a little trickier. They take a little while, as you all know. You know, the antibodies decay over a number of months. The circulating tumor decay is in minutes. You chop out the patient's cancer, and all of the circulating cell-free tumor DNA is gone within minutes. So within a day or two after surgery, you can do that test. And if you see a signal, the surgeon didn't get everything.
Wow. This reminds me of similar to some of the literature you have around like prostate cancer and like the PSA and after following a prostatectomy, like just zero doesn't exist. So that's sensitive. That's what are when you think about applicability of this, I'm excited because as you clearly know, this our oncology colleagues, just in terms of medical oncology, this is par for the course. So this is wonderful. But as you reflect, what do you think are some of the components that might have limited this study? What are some limitations?
Well, we didn't have another 1,000-person independent cohort to validate. And that's the most obvious limitation. The plus side is all of the cohorts that have been looked at that are independent, they see the same individual factors being relevant. Protective to be a woman, protective to have normal immune system, protective to have an unknown primary, because that literally means your immune system got rid of the primary lesion. Assuming you've got nodal disease, you're twice as likely to not recur if your immune system already got rid of the primary. And that is, now we know that's how the unknown primary works in Merkel cell carcinoma. So, you know, all those factors are individually proven across multiple cohorts, but we don't have one cohort where we can do a multivariable recurrence risk analysis yet. But so that's technically the biggest issue, is that it's not been independently validated. But based on the staging system, and it can make as much as a fourfold difference in an individual person's risk. So if you take a stage 3A person, their typical risk of having the cancer come back is 40% across all stage 3As. If you take a woman with an unknown primary who is immune competent, her risk is 20%. And if you take a man who's 90 years old, who is immune suppressed and has a known primary on the head and neck, also a stage 3A, okay, exactly the same stage,
Yeah.
it's now an 85% risk. So it's a four solid fourfold difference, same stage,
Yeah.
but a fourfold risk difference. And then, of course, stage doesn't tell you how much remaining risk you have. And that's one of the things the patients appreciate the most. There's so much cheering as every 3 months goes by, they have a significant decrease in their risk that it'll ever come back.
So that's wonderful. It's the key to emphasize it. Time really with Merkel brings your assurance. Time brings your assurance and is an important one to emphasize. And then, as you're nicely highlighting here, the AJCC staging that has all the factors that we already know about that we typically think about in cancer, is it invasive or not? What's the size, nodal status, metastatic status? If you add these non-stage factor, have information on gender, have information on immunosuppression status. That's unbelievable for me in terms of understanding that unknown primary. I find that super fascinating that, you know, we talk about unknown, we see melanoma of unknown primaries, but in this instance, that unknown primary is a good problem because your body got itself revved up enough that it could fight the cancer. Is the way that that works. So add in that and that, you could have a person's recurrent risk really change up to a factor of 4. That's significant change there in terms of the news you get to share at the bedside and the hope you have to bring.
Yes, I think so. Telling somebody you have an 80% chance of it coming back versus a 20%, that sounds really different. Yeah. And it helps guide us. You know, the plus is we've got immune therapies that can work in the majority of patients now. And catching these early isn't just academic. Yeah. It makes potentially a life-saving difference.
There's an action behind.
Absolutely. We've got things, we can still be kind of optimistic to the patients that we've got some wonderful things that we can bring to bear if we detect their cancer coming back early. And so it's a very hopeful time.
Yeah. And also probably plays a role, too, as we think about future clinical trials and think about medication development around Merkel cell carcinoma. So you mentioned this at the beginning, but I think this is key for the listeners. How do we begin to incorporate this in our plan of care? How do we begin to incorporate it so that our clinicians are aware? I always think about as critically being multidisciplinary, particularly for Merkel cell. So we have our colleagues in surgical oncology, in medical oncology. How do we bring colleagues along so that we're all on the same page, educating our patients similarly around this?
So I want to say that dermatology plays a huge role in this. And of course, that's the thrust of this listener group. And I'm really happy with what our team has done for this cancer over time, but I'm a dermatologist. You know, I don't infuse drugs. I don't do sentinel lymph node biopsies and I don't radiate, but I sure as heck am the patient advocate. I know about the disease. I know how to play in the sandbox with my colleagues who are surgeons, radiation oncologists, and medical oncologists. And we work as a team and it's a lot of fun. And the dermatologist often knows more and is unbiased. They don't have a hammer. They're not trying to radiate everything or cut everything. The dermatologist can play a huge role in getting multidisciplinary care, advocating for the patient, informing the patient of something like this, which is incredibly valuable to the patient. You know, knowing whether it's an 80% or a 20%, and that the stage would have given you the same number, I mean, given you a 40% number that was just right in between and not accurate for those two extreme people, it really makes a difference in management. And the whole team, once they're aware, then everybody makes decisions based on that information.
That's wonderful. And for the audience, I got a chance to Google Merkel cell carcinoma risk calculator. So I would recommend folks, it's as easy as that, really. Any insight is just so folks can just go on there and just get the information on there, the staging information, and of course, the non-stage factors that we've mentioned. Whenever there's new studies, I think it's always important that we sort of pause, reflect, and make sure that this is able to represent all of our patients so that we're not missing groups that this does not necessarily serve. Are there gaps here? Can we generalize this? Can this be applicable to all of our patients, or do you think there is more work to be done in that area?
I love that question, and it's really important. And I think that in a way, this study obviously moves us much more in that direction because we weren't taking women versus men into account, or immune status, or age, or any of those things that we know now are really important, or unknown primary status and such. So I think we have now captured the most important ones. I think you're also hinting about, is there something about race? And we don't see a big signal for race. I don't think it's going to be on the scale of any of the things that we're finding. Merkel is mostly a disease of people with not so much pigmentation. So we don't have as much robust data intrinsically because it doesn't affect people as much who have more pigmentation. But all the data that we see is that once you have the cancer, of course, you're massively protected from getting it. Once you have it, race doesn't seem to be a huge factor in your chance of recurrence, assuming you're getting reasonable care, which of course, then that's something that we have to make sure of is equitable and such.
That's wonderful. This has been an enlightening conversation. I know I had just a snippet of learning from you, but it has really truly been your life's work. What do you think the next steps are?
Well, I think you nailed it in a way that putting some of the new blood tests in addition to this would be a nice, because people are going to be increasingly using those, and they'll probably allow a little bit better refinement of risk. Adjuvant therapy and the risk of the cancer is going to come back, and using this kind of risk assessment for trial enrollment is another component towards the future. And I think I'm so appreciative of everybody who's listening today and hoping that they'll remember, just like for melanoma. And I think the Melanoma Institute of Australia has done a fantastic job with melanoma risk across many different settings. And I encourage people to use those when we meet with our melanoma patients to assess their risk. But the Merkel risk assessment calculator is at least as useful because of the rapid decrease in risk over 5 years. And all of the tools that we can bring to bear to surveil and treat patients with this cancer.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Dr. Paul Nayem, it's been wonderful being in conversation with you for our Dialogues in Dermatology audience. Thank you for all the work. It's been really enlightening for me.
Thank you so much, Yemi.
When you join Mayo Clinic's Dermatology Department, you're joining a team that's transforming dermatologic care for the better. Here, you're doing the work that not only makes our patients' lives better, you're doing the work that changes your life. Visit jobs.mayoclinic.org/dermatology to learn more.
Thanks again for tuning in to another edition of Dialogues in Dermatology. For more dialogues, subscribe to us through the website of the American Academy of Dermatology, then link your subscription through your favorite podcast app. Remember, the subscription is free for residents. New podcasts are released each week, in addition to free special bonus episodes. You can also listen to dialogues online through the AAD website. Thanks again for listening.